This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Phil Williams here with you on 5 Live and for Simon Mayer. And as it's Friday afternoon, pen in hand, Dr. Mark Kermode returns. How are you?
I hope that the live webcam was just catching that fantastically athletic thing that you just did. For the benefit of the view of the listening only public, I made the international sign to Phil of I need a pen, and you leapt Superman-like from the studio and leapt back in again. It was faster than a speeding bullet, Phil. I was really impressed.
That's all about respect, Mark.
Is it?
It's respect for you.
Is that why you did it? It wasn't just showing off. Okay, but it was quite exciting. That's probably the most... Looking at the movie releases out this week, that's probably the most exciting thing that's going to happen for the next 40 minutes.
I'm at the stage in my life, Mark, where showing off physically doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Did you check out the YouTube of me and Mayo doing the 3-mile
Yes,
run?
I did see that. I was intrigued as to why you chose to run it in a suit, which I know he asked you partway through.
Yeah.
But more importantly, your choice of footwear.
The flip-flops.
Yeah.
Well, the suit was... I just hate that jock thing about, you know, I'm going to do some sport, yes, I've got to have the right kit, right, you know, and I've got to have the right, you know, shorts that don't rub on the inside of my thighs, and I've got to have all this stuff, and I've got to, you know, wax bits and... Rubbish. My whole... if something was chasing you, you'd just run. You wouldn't go, I'm terribly sorry, I haven't got my Nikes. You just run in whatever it was. So, point one. So, I think, essentially, wearing any form of specialist sporting gear is just showing off and really is to be discouraged. And as far as the flip-flops thing is concerned, that happened because some time ago I was in a party and there were some guys around here, all very sporty, and they were talking about doing a quarter marathon. They said, of course, can't involve Mark in this discussion because he couldn't run. And I said, you know what, I can't step. Of course I could. Not only could I do a quarter marathon, I could do it without any training and in flip-flops. And they went, yeah, right. And I did. I did a quarter marathon without any training and in flip-flops. And afterwards, I did it in under an hour and I felt absolutely fabulous. The next day, I couldn't stand up, but they didn't see me the next day. It was a principal stand against all form of sporting jockism.
And who's the younger of the two, you or Simon Mayer?
Simon's 64 now, isn't he? And I'm 37, so I think I've slightly got the edge on him as far as age is concerned. No, I think we're almost the same age. I think he and I are almost exactly the same age.
If you're wondering what on earth we're talking about, and you'd be right to do that, then you need to go to the website for more details, bbc.co.uk/5live. Click on Mayo's page, and you will see this video. I'm sure it's still up there. If not, you can put Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode into YouTube and see what happens.
Yeah, two fat blokes. Well, actually, one fat bloke and one thin bloke running round the Chariots of Fire set. It was for sport relief, and we did it whilst doing the box office top 10. And Mayo kept saying, "Oh, this is really hard, you know. It's really hard running with all this talking.
Running and talking is difficult."
Yeah. Do you know the talking that he did at 10?
Yeah, he did.
At 9, at 8, and the talking that I did was explaining what the movies were.
There was one point where he tried to assert his masculinity when he said, "Can we go a bit faster?"
Yeah, and then, right. The terrible thing to say to me, because I'm deeply competitive, I did go a bit faster, and then he cut the corner off. And you can see that on the video, you can absolutely see
it. Oh, you can clearly see that.
Cheats. He so cheats, because it's like, it doesn't matter, I'm not competitive, I don't care, it's not a problem. But actually, you know, when it came down, he needed to win.
You're so competitive, that's now going to end up in the courts of sporting arbitration in Lausanne. Terrible. Right, the movie's out this week.
If I knew what that meant, Phil, I would laugh at it, but I don't know what that is.
27 Dresses, Drillbit Taylor, The Book of Revelation, The Hottie and the Knotty.
Mm. You know what that is, don't you?
I'm sure it's Paris Hilton, isn't
it? It is, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
How did I know that?
How did you know that The Hottie and the Knotty was the Paris Hilton movie?
Because I just heard it mentioned. It's in the sphere of influence.
No, it's just one of those really interesting things. I mean, no one will go and see The Hottie and the Knotty, but everyone knows that The Hottie and the Knotty is the Paris Hilton movie.
Someone said to me the other day, you know, it's been really cold of late. Someone said, weather. Yeah, the weather's been freezing.
Not for those of us in flip-flops. No, it's absolutely fine, Ryan.
And someone said, it's so cold, Paris Hilton's wearing underwear again. Right, should we do the box office top 10?
Thank you. On the basis of that gag, Phil, yes, I think the sooner the better.
At 10, The Orphanage.
Let's give it its full Spanish title, El Orfanato, which is...
I thought you said you didn't do showing off.
No, but I mean, you know, this is... Actually, that is showing off, but in the case of this, I'm willing to do it. So, did you ever go and see Pan's Labyrinth?
No. You told me to twice I saw you at various screenings of other less formidable movies.
Mm. That you didn't.
No.
So you know that The Hottie and the Knotty is the Paris Hilton movie, but you didn't bother to go and see
it. I did it on the grounds that you quite often recommend stuff I don't like.
Right, but not in this particular case. If you'd gone to see it, you would have realised that it was the best movie of the year, and it was. Well, don't look to somebody behind me for backup, Phil. It was a case in which you deeply... Okay, well, so here's the short version.
It's on DVD now, is it?
What, the Pan's Labyrinth? Yeah, it's on DVD. It's absolutely
Is it genuinely worth a couple of hours of my time?
It, I mean, really, I don't know how you're progressing from one day to another without having seen it. It was, quite simply, the best movie of that year by a million miles. I mean, it was absolutely fabulous, in the same way that Assassination of Jesse James was the best movie of last year. But this... The Orphanage, El Orphan After, is produced by Guillermo del Toro, and it's directed by Juan Antonio Bayona, and who's a newcomer. He's made short films beforehand, and it's just the most wonderfully chilling ghost story. It's a story of a woman who comes back to the orphanage where she grew up. She comes back with her husband and her son, who it turns out she's keeping some secrets from. The son then makes friends with other children in the orphanage who, it turns out, may not actually be there, may not actually be alive. If you like things like Jack Clayton movies, if you like The Others, if you like, you know, creepy, ghostly, not loads of special effects, although there are plenty of scares, it's just terrific. It's heartbreaking, it's beautifully written, it's absolutely wonderfully directed.
I'll hate that.
William Peter Blatty, who's the guy who wrote The Exorcist, and of course that to me is the highest, you know, achievement of 20th century art, said, in his opinion, and I agree with him, that it was absolutely the best movie that he'd seen in the last year, and it was the best piece of storytelling he'd seen in Age and Ages. It is just terrific. I've now seen it twice, and both times, not only have the audience been overwhelmed and moved, but on at least four occasions, they've all gone... and leapt out of their seat. Now, the first time I saw it in Cannes, and somebody I didn't know, somebody completely unknown to me, grabbed my arm so hard
really?
That they dug their fingernails into my very manly arm. Obviously, and you know, it was one of those kind of weird experiences. One of those things that only happens in the best horror films, that people forget that the fact they don't know you, they just know that it's another human being, and they just
they
need your support. Exactly, they just need your support. It's terrific.
Excuse me.
So you won't go and see that either?
No, probably not.
No.
Lorraine in North London, thank you, Dr. Kermode, for the review of The Orphanage, which as ever was spot on, and the care you took to avoid giving away the key moments in the film.
Great.
I have a query which I would appreciate the good doctor's thoughts on, though I understand it may be difficult to discuss with a view to not giving away the ending.
Okay.
The question is this.
Okay, be careful.
How did the child gain access to Thomas's room if the doorway was papered over?
Okay, can I just say that I can't even begin to...
Okay.
I'll tell you what I'll do. Has that got a...
Yeah,
came with an address?
Sure. Keep that.
Yeah, I'll have a... What
can
I'll do is I will have a bash at explaining... Yes, because it's the sort of thing... If one of the things with The Orphanage, and it is true, people are being very good about it. If you start explaining... It's not like one of those things like Sixth Sense, he's dead, you know, crying game, it's a boy, yeah. You know. It's not like that, or, you know, Citizen Kane, it's a sledge. But it's just... You don't want to reveal anything about it at all because you want people to discover it as they go along. And it's really nice that people... I mean, critics and audiences are like me like that, so I will have a bash at attempting to reply to that sensibly.
Mark will do that only on the grounds that you accept it in the spirit in which it's offered and you don't print it out and put it on eBay, all right? Nine,
well, you're
going
to get an email from Mark here. You're not going to get very
you're
much of that.
Blowing all the film.
Yeah, Race, haven't seen it. Bollywood movie wasn't press screened. If anybody has seen it, as usual, send
it in. Is that still going on?
Well,
how
it is
have
you
been doing this for and they're
is,
not screening them?
It is with some distributors, not all. With some, it's changing, but slowly.
At eight, The Other Berlin Girl.
The ongoing debate with The Other Berlin Girl is whether or not one ought to take children to see it. It's a 12A certificate movie. It's about Henry VIII. And, of course, the answer to that is 12A means 12. It doesn't mean, hey, take along your 8-year-old, because what Henry VIII and his various... partners did is not PG rated stuff. I mean, I actually think the film's okay. I think there's some interesting stuff about it. I really like Eric Banner as I think he's a good actor and I quite like him as Henry VIII. But you've had a couple of people have written and say that, you know, they took their kids to see it and they were shocked by the goings on. You know, it's the story of Henry VIII. It's not a nice story. And I mean, I thought when I was watching it, I thought it was a 15 certificate movie. I was surprised that it was 12. I mean, I think the BBFC probably got very good reasons for giving it 12, but 12 means 12. 12 doesn't mean 8-year-olds. I'm
is it
boring
like
you
Elizabeth
to tears, aren't I?
No, I'm flicking through emails that you've only been on 2 minutes. And I've got a bundle of emails.
Okay,
is it like Elizabeth the Golden Age, where they change history?
Well, there's an interesting debate about this. The woman that wrote the book says, "Look, it's real, it's true. I'm very, very close to it. I know all this stuff because actually there was a number of accusations during before the beheading of they were to do with witchcraft and incest and all manner of stuff. And her source material attempts to deal with where all those things came from, but." There have been many things subsequently written in newspapers by people who wear those mortarboard hats and, you know, smoke pipes and have... saying, it's really absolutely not... So, hey...
Are you trying to stereotype academics?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. But I'm very, very pleased that there are academics who will write in, you know, I am Dr. Blitherington Smitherington and I did study this and I'm telling you that it didn't happen. It's great. I mean, a good academic argument. I don't know what the answer is, but it's the film itself is dramatically all right, except it's two different films. One of them is a dark, serious thing about politics and history because it's Peter Morgan. The other one is a sort of bodice ripper. And the bodice ripper thing I'm not that interested in.
Sure. At 7, the game plan.
Which, again, I'm letting you down terribly. Never saw the game plan because it came out the week that I was off. We did, however, ask last week for a couple of reviews for it, and apparently it was a bit of a waste of time.
Who's in it?
The Rock, Dwayne.
Oh, is it the Disney one?
Yeah.
But Simon had the little girl on.
That's right. Dwayne, The Rock.
Johnson.
Johnson, that's his name, yeah. But I haven't seen it, so can't criticise it. I'm sure it's a masterpiece, and I think he's a fabulous actor, probably.
At 6, Vantage Point.
Which is modern-day Rashomon. Now, help me out here, because Simon never did. You know what Rashomon is, don't you?
Who?
Rashomon.
No.
Okay. Japanese movie, 1950s, same event, seen from several different perspectives, giving birth to the phrase Rashomon-like, meaning the same thing seen from several different perspectives.
I did know it was based on another film.
It's not based on that. I mean, it's just that when anything is Rashomon-like, it means it's one event.
But there's not been a film that's attempted to do this before.
Yeah, there has, Rashomon. And there've been several films since Rashomon's done it, but that's what you refer to them all as. They are all Rashomon. Like, this is the attempted. Well, actually, you think it is the assassination of the president, but it turns out that it might be and it might not be. And for the first four versions of seeing it, you go, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. By about the fifth one, you start to think you're in Groundhog Day, and then it's like the filmmakers realise that everyone's getting bored with the intellectual stuff, so they just start blowing things up, and then it all ends in the most ludicrous car chase with rocket launchers, and then it stops. So I don't remember there being quite so many explosions in the original Rashomon.
I'll wait for that to come on the telly. 5, 10,000 BC. I've seen Gladiator. Do I need to see this?
No. Right. Why would you compare Gladiator with 10,000 BC?
Just because I saw the poster and it just seems to be lots of men not wearing very much.
With sandals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running around Chariots of Fire like you did in yours.
Gladiator, directed by Ridley Scott. Very good central performance by Russell Crowe. Actually, fairly well written screenplay. I think a good, solid piece of work. 10,000 BC, basically a film made by somebody who must have watched Teenage Caveman, must have watched Apocalypto, but thought, I like that, but I don't like all the brutality stuff in it. Wants to make a sword and sandals movie, wants to have a bit when some mammoths charging around, wants to have an Attack of the Giant Emu sequence. Can't quite figure out how to put it all together, so put some pyramids in and sort of goes a bit Stargate. And then, I mean, it's just all over the place. And it's funny because you're sitting there thinking, there's so much digital effects on screen. That must have cost a bazillion dollars. Why am I so bored by it? Mm. Why is it so? And the thing that I was trying to think myself into is because we're in the, you know, holiday period. If you were a kid, if you're a 12-year-old kid, would you think, you know, that's great? In the same way that I used to like the Ray Harryhausen movies, or the same way that the first time I ever saw the Raquel Welch movie, 1 Million BC, you know, I really like that. I think the answer is probably not.
At 4, Meet the Spartans.
Which is just terrible. Just, it's so, so depressing.
Who's in that?
Sean, what's his face, out of EastEnders? Sean Maguire, is that his name?
Oh, yeah.
Him out of EastEnders. Here's the gag, right?
Tex from Grange Hill.
Is that who he is?
Yeah.
Right, okay, from Grange Hill to EastEnders.
Wow.
The whole gag of Meet the Spartans is, you know, in 300, they all looked a bit camp, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's funny. And that's it. And then, and they're 5 minutes in, right, you go, oh, well, that joke's finished now. Right. What can we do now? Paris Hilton, she's rubbish. What else? American Idol? Yeah, that's rubbish as well. Get somebody who looks like George Bush, throw him in a pit. And it's literally, and honestly, you're watching the clock going around now, it's like there's, well, actually, it's not 90 minutes, it's 78 minutes. It's like every minute they run out of anything to do. So it's like, what can we do next? And at one point, this is fantastic. Do you know who Dane Cook is?
No.
Exactly. Exactly, right? Exactly. And God bless you for not knowing who Dane Cook is, right?
I thought Dane Dodgy Grant then.
The lousiest American comedian on the planet, right? And a guy comes on, he's a Dane Cook lookalike, but he doesn't look like Dane Cook, and he doesn't sound like Dane Cook, and no one knows who Dane Cook is anyway, and he does a routine that Sean Maguire has to interrupt by saying, "Oi, Dane Cook, don't come round here," saying that. All the audience is going, "Eh? It's, what?"
Right. At 3, a film that's already annoyed me just by the way it's put a number into the title. Step Up to the Streets.
But that is because it is 2. There was a Step Up before.
Oh, okay.
You see, they can't do...
So is it Step Up 2, colon, the Streets?
Yeah, but it's also Step Up to the Streets. Do you see how that... Exactly. You, me, respect.
Safe.
So people jumping around. But, I mean, it's they. I'm wondering what they're going to do with Step Up 3.
Yeah.
Step Up 3.
No, they'll call it Free.
Free.
Step Up Free.
Freestyle. Step Up Freestyle.
Yeah.
Step Up 4... Ever.
Let's not push it.
Okay, fine.
Two, The Spiderwick Chronicles.
Which I liked. I mean, I thought it was good fun. It's good to see it going in at number two because it's of the big sort of special effects kids releases, it was the one that looked like it was going to get overlooked slightly. It is effectively a horror movie for children, which is I think is a very good thing. Her story is that family move into an old house. House used to be lived in by a bloke who wrote an encyclopedia of how all fairies and goblins work. The goblins now want to get the encyclopedia because then they can take over the world, and so they have to stop all the monsters coming in. And there's big special effects, good characters, well written, rips along. Some bits of it are genuinely quite scary. Ends up in a nicely sort of resolved but not entirely squishy family hug, and I thought it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
The number one movie in the UK this week, according to box office receipts, Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah, and you see, that is a whole other matter, because I don't think Doctor Seuss translates very well to the screen. And the reason I don't think he does is all the Doctor Seuss books are based on verbal gaggery. They're based on things like, you know, Little Lucy who was only two, that. It's the sound of the words, right? And when you look at the illustrations in the Doctor Seuss books, all they are is an illustration of a verbal widget. So it's like when you get the Cat in the Hat and he's piling the thing on the thing on the thing on the thing, and then next to it there's a drawing. And the drawing, of course, is absurd, because what you're actually listening to is the sound of the words. Well, in this case, you're not. In this case, it's the CGI, we can do it all. And consequently, it's all a bit like, it's all right. I mean, cuddly animals, CGI, totally inoffensive.
It's very American as well, isn't it? That's the other thing.
Yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with Doctor Seuss being American, and nothing wrong with Americans.
No, but I just wonder if it has the same resonance here. That's what I meant.
Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought you were going all Sarkozy.
No, fine.
No, it's just that it's not...
There's no xenophobia here, my friend.
Isn't there? Right, okay, fine. No, it's just that it's not very good.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Not from a xenophobia, it's just that it's
just
not
quality-wise.
Yeah, but the only thing to be said in its favour is the certificate is you. Contains no material likely to offend or harm.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Phil Williams here, and for Simon Mayer, we're partway through Mark Kermode's movie reviews. We've done the box office top 10. Just about to talk you through some of the films that are out this week. Before that, he's baffled because I've said to him, there's only been one good film out this year and that's it, and you don't know what it is, do you?
But no, but I mean, it's like there was one week this year in which there was There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men, and Juno, all released simultaneously. I mean, that's at least three. Is it any of those three?
Yeah, it is.
With Juno?
Yeah.
But, okay, so have you seen There Will Be Blood?
No, I have to confess, no. I haven't.
Okay, have you seen No Country for Old Men?
Put off by the trailer.
Yeah, okay, so I think...
Do you think I should... Well, I've got them both. I've got them both on DVD.
Have you? Okay, right.
Not through illicit means, before you say.
Okay, fine. I think that what you need to do is go away and watch those films. It's like me saying, football, it's been rubbish this year, hasn't it? Yeah. I haven't seen a good match this year. Really? No, I haven't.
No, it's not like that, because I've seen plenty of other films that have been rubbish.
Well, but you haven't seen any of the good ones.
Only two. You've only mentioned two.
What have you seen? What have you seen?
We're in March and you've mentioned two.
What have you seen?
This year?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, Rambo, rubbish.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
What else have I said?
But that's the exact... Okay, here, but we're going to have to move on. But that's, yeah. I can't say... You're in a world, right? You have a choice. You can go and see Rambo, or you can go and see No Country for Old Men, or There Will Be Blood, but you choose to see Rambo. It's like you're rapidly becoming the enemy, Phil. You have to stop doing that.
I had to say that for journalistic reasons. You have to understand that.
Why? Did you have to interview Sly?
No, but we had to do... We have to talk about it, don't we? It was everywhere when it was released.
Yeah, no, the best thing about Rambo was it wasn't everywhere when it was released. One cinema chain refused to take it on the grounds that it was pants beyond belief. And the fabulous thing is it came and went really, really quickly.
Riz in Swindon. My kids normally come out with a list of films they want to see. When I wind them up by saying Mark doesn't like it, they shout at me and scream, "What does Mark know?"
Exactly.
AG from Leeds in the Step Up series.
Step Up for Real. That's what we missed.
Rob in Blythe. I saw Pan's Labyrinth over Christmas on the telly. I know the Doctor doesn't approve of TV, but I know now it's about films, and even I know it's a masterpiece.
Good. There we go.
Alan in Birmingham. Help. I missed the name of that film similar to the others, and I don't have the squint in it, so I can't look it up. It was The Orphanage.
El Orfanato, The Orphanage. Yeah. I think on the posters it is officially The Orphanage. Yeah. You should also instantly go and see, there's a couple of Jack Clayton movies. There's a thing called Our Mother's House, which is very, very worth seeing. And, of course, you know, things like The Innocents and Haunting and stuff.
Talking about things on posters, Gary in Daytona Beach says he drove past his local cinema last week and on the now playing board outside they had the movie 10KBC. Right, not 10,000, 10KBC.
Very good.
Right? I don't know whether they had run out of zeros, says Gary, but making the movie sound like some sort of charity fun run made it sound more appealing to me. A few years ago, the same cinema advertised Mr. and Mrs. Smith as The Smiths. So if you could beat that, film posters that have been abbreviated or shortened somehow, We'll have them, please. 85058 on the text, or you can email phil@bbc.co.uk. Which one do you want to do first?
27 dresses. Right. Well, let's do 27 dresses. So, Catherine Hagel, who, you know, is obviously clearly very talented. Story is, Catherine Hagel is, you know...
I like Knocked Up.
Let's come back to it. Do you know what a high concept film is?
You're about to tell me.
Okay, high concept is the classic, when, you know, you can pitch it in one sentence. So, for example, Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger are twins. Mm. That's it. That's classic high concept movie. Yeah, okay. I get it. $30 million, fine. So, 27 Dresses, the concept is always the bridesmaid, never the bride. That's it. That's the whole film. Catherine Hagel is somebody who's always the bridesmaid, never the bride. She goes around all her friends' weddings doing the wedding thing. She's secretly in love with her boss, but her boss actually is more interested in her sister, it turns out. She goes to all these weddings. She keeps the wedding dress. She believes in weddings. She starts getting followed around by a journalist who writes wedding columns and is deeply cynical about weddings. But in fact, of course, in meeting Catherine Hagel, maybe he's going to write an article about how she's completely bonkers, and maybe something completely surprising is going to happen, which you obviously couldn't predict. Anyway, here's a clip.
You buzzed past me earlier. I saw you changing gowns. You were in two weddings in one night, weren't you? It's a little upsetting, don't you think?
Well, they're both really, really good friends of mine, and their weddings happen to be on the same night, so what was I supposed to do?
Oh, no, that's not the upsetting part. How do you stand it? I mean, isn't one wedding bad enough?
I love weddings. I always have.
Really?
Yeah.
Which part? The forced merriment, the horrible music, or the bad food?
Actually, it's meeting upbeat people like yourself.
Love is patient. Love is kind. Love means slowly losing your mind.
What is it you do again?
I'm a writer.
Right. This is my building.
I got it.
No, I got it.
Sure?
Yeah. He's gonna be right back. Hold on.
Don't you think it's a whole lot of ritual for something that, let's face it, he's got about a 50-50 shot of making it out of the gate?
Oh, how very refreshing. A man who doesn't believe in marriage.
I'm just trying to point out the hypocrisy of the spectacle.
Oh, that's so noble of you. Do you also go around telling small children that Santa Claus doesn't exist? Because someone needs to blow that wide open.
So you admit that believing in marriage is kind of like believing in Santa Claus?
No. I don't know why I'm arguing this with a perfect stranger, but yes, marriage, like everything good and important, isn't easy. Cynicism, on the other hand, always is. It was very interesting meeting you.
Cynicism is always easy, and I think that's my cue. So, you can pretty much tell how this is going to pan out. Here's the problem with all this. It's a 12A certificate movie, romantic comedy. What do they say about it? They say 12A for moderate sex references, like to be familiar to most adolescent, infrequent use of modern... I mean, basically, it's fairly innocuous stuff. 12A, though, however, so there is some grown-up stuff in it. I'm saying this because it's important, because we're in this period at the moment when people are going to want to go to the cinema with their kids. So 12A, check out the website if you want to know exactly what those references are. The bigger problem with the film is this. Catherine Hagel, I think, is clearly very talented, and she is a good comedian. I have a problem with Knocked Up, which is that I think that Knocked Up is, and I hate to sound like, you know, boring old songs, I think it's just a bit sexist. I mean, you can't imagine it working the other way around. If it was the guy who was really, really attractive and had a fabulous job, and the woman who was a slob, and she decided to, you know, stay with him because of the fact they're having... It just wouldn't work like that. In the end, Knocked Up is one of those movies in which the slobby, nerdy, geeky guy ends up with the ludicrously attractive woman. I don't care about all the other stuff. And there are... Now, that's not to say that there aren't things in Knocked Up that are good. There are.
It's a comedy, Mark. It's not a plateau.
You know, yes, it is a comedy, but everything is political. And I'm sorry. It's just all you have to do is see what the problems with it are. And I'm not the first journalist to say this, incidentally. You know, it's just reverse the roles and see whether it worked the other way around. In the case of 27 Dresses, the problem, again, is she's a funny actress. She's got comic timing. She's witty and charming. And, you know, and I'm sure she has greater range than this material allows her to do. The dialogue is clunky. The construction is terribly derivative. It's like it's a bit Four Weddings and it's a bit Wedding Crashers and it's a bit The Goodbye Girl and it's a bit of everything else. And it all sort of piles on. It shares a screenwriter with The Devil Wears Prada, which looks positively radical in comparison with the way in which this all sort of fits together. And you're just sitting there thinking, I wish she was in a better film, because she's clearly very good and it's clearly not worthy of her talents. It Knocked Up, what, you know, was a much more interesting film. It's just it Knocked Up bothered me a lot more, because I do think in the end Knocked Up is just a, you know, male nerd fan. I think the Revenge of the Nerds thing has to stop. I think the Judd Apatow thing, and more of this in a moment, I think the Judd Apatow thing has run its course. You know, I lived through Revenge of the Nerds the first time round. I don't really...
Some of us aren't that old. Is it let me ask you another question. Is it possible
that
for
was
you?
So cheap.
Is it possible
you're
for you?
You're pulling, you know, rank on me because you're younger.
Is it possible for you to go to a cinema now and just enjoy a movie?
Yeah, yeah, good film.
Just to let it wash over you.
Yep, good films.
Just
love
go. You know,
yeah, love
of,
movies. That
it's not going to change
good.
The world. It's not going to win an Oscar, but
yep.
it's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Case of 27 Dresses. You know what? It's not that film. However. In a week in which The Hottie and the Knottie is out, it is absolutely the default position for, you know, hey, it's not going to... it's not, because The Hottie and the Knottie is one of those movies that you do come out of thinking, you know, nuclear strike now, but we'll move on.
OK, because we'll do it in a minute.
Yeah, sure.
27 Dresses, I saw the trailer for,
yes.
because I liked her from Knocked Up. And after I'd seen the
Catherine
trailer...
Catherine Hagel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after I'd seen the trailer...
Up.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
No, I know, I
mean,
know. You didn't.
I liked it from the film.
I know.
Stop trying to get me into trouble. I can do that on my own.
Yeah, okay, fine. But you just call me old.
Anyway, one all.
Yeah, fine.
And as I saw the trailer, I thought, I don't need to pay now.
You've just seen the film.
I've seen it.
Yeah, you know how it works, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's, and that's it. Exactly. It's a high-concept movie. That's exactly what it is. You see the trailer, I don't need to see the film.
Felix sends an email... prompted by your discussion with Simon last week on the podcast,
mm-hmm.
right? On last week's subject of people enjoying an excess of seats in the cinema,
oh, yeah.
a few years ago, a friend and I went to see the first showing of Lord of the Rings in Leicester Square in a packed cinema. Packed, that was, except for the seats in front where one clearly devout Tolkien fan had bought himself no less than three seats, one for him, one for his coat, and one for his lunchbox. We thought we'd been looking forward to the film till we met him.
That's right. But you see, the thing is, it's a terrible thing to say, but I understand that. I absolutely understand that thing about, you know, you want space. You want to be not bothered.
Interestingly, from Paula, I think this is worth a mention. Stop talking about the orphanage. The only place to watch this film seems to be in the London area, and us northerners will have to wait, as usual, for the DVD release. It's a shame, really. I wanted to see a film... a decent film this weekend, but they only seem to play PAP in my local cinema. Now, is that the case?
No, The Orphanage is getting a national release. It may be that... I mean, it is actually playing in some multiplexes, but if it's not, what you need to do is go to your local independent or art house cinema if you're lucky
enough. And how many parts of the UK have one?
Most towns do. I mean, there is an independent cinema in most major towns. And also, if there isn't, then most multiplex cinemas will... the thing with The Orphanage is, although it's a foreign language film, it's considered to be a mainstream release. I mean, it has a mainstream distributor behind it, and they are thinking of it being, you know, a charting movie. The fact is that, it is clearly taking money. It is in the UK top 10. It may be that you have to wait a week or so for it to get... to your town, but it really is well worth seeing it. The other thing you can do is you can ring your local multiplex and ask them to book it. I mean, it's one of those awful things that it's only if people kind of demand that they get shown a wider range of stuff that actually happens. I mean, look, for example, at what's happened with Bollywood cinema. Mm. Bollywood cinema plays in mainstream multiplexes because the audience are there for it and they've said, look, we want to see them. We want them on Saturday mornings. We want to see these films. And suddenly, there's a whole section of multiplex cinema which has been taken up by... and that's a fantastic thing. The Orphanage is fairly mainstream, but you may well have to go to your independent art house cinema to do it. And if so, then make the effort. Because the other thing is, your independent cinema needs your patronage in the way that the multiplex cinemas don't. And there are fabulous places. Like, for example, if you're in Bristol, it's the Watershed. Or if you're where I am, you know, it's the Harbour Lights. Or if you're in Manchester, it's Corner House. Each one of those, they will have a... And it's, if you ever get the chance to see a movie there rather than the multiplex, then do it. Because if you don't, those cinemas will struggle. And they are the place that you go to see those films. I mean, sorry, this is something I feel quite soapboxy about. But it's a kind of... the audience have to demonstrate the demand in order for them to flourish, in order for them to survive. Because heaven knows the multiplexes have actually made choice less rather than more.
Listening to BBC Radio 5 Live, and that was a party political broadcast by the Independent Cinema Kevin Party. The Hottie and the Knottie, Paris Hilton.
OK, so it's... I mean, obviously, Hottie and the Knottie is ghastly and terrible and awful. Obviously, just the beginning. So the story is, there's a horrible guy, and he wants to go out with Paris Hilton, who's the Hottie. But in order to go out with the Hottie, he has to get a girlfriend for the Knottie. Okay, who's her best friend but is ugly and creepy. And so it's so funny because he has to find a girlfriend for the ugly one, a boyfriend for the ugly one, so that he can go out Paris Hilton. Okay, so number of problems with this. Firstly, stupid idea done very, very badly. I mean, the Knottie is, you know, kind of looks like a monster and arrives to the sound of braying horses. Stop laughing, Phil. Stop laughing. It's beyond you.
I'm not laughing at you, how animated it's made you.
What's meant to happen is the story is meant to say, you know, actually, beauty is on the inside. Okay, and the way it demonstrates beauty is on the inside is that the Knottie goes to plastic surgeon and is eugenically changed in order to a Hottie. And then the horrible, creepy guy who loved Paris Hilton in the first place discovers that actually he might fancy the Knottie, but only after she's had intense plastic surgery. So clearly, for one, it's a Nazi tract. Sorry, there we go. Simple, simple thing, it is. OK, it's a film which says, beauty is only skin deep, but you know what? We can cut that skin up. You know, we can change it. We can turn you in, because in the end, who wants to be ugly, right? Point number one. So even from that point of view, evil, foul, horrible. Point number two. Why does Paris Hilton exist exactly? There was a piece in the paper the other day. Some guy wrote a big piece about, oh, all these, everyone who slags off Paris Hilton, it's all men. It's all men of a certain age, you know, getting all kind of like, oh, and they're all...
People who run in flip-flops.
No. The thing, see, I mean, Paris Hilton means nothing to me on any levels other than every now and then she turns up in films. She turned up in The House of Wax and she...
Some of them she didn't mean to be in.
No, I believe that point's debatable, Phil, but I'm going to leave that area entirely to you. Let's just discuss Paris Hilton in this film, OK? Terrible actress, looks awful, can't speak properly, apparently, doesn't have any facial expressions, not entirely sure why, in a rubbish vehicle that she's clearly chosen for herself because she's a co-producer of it, so it's kind of her fault anyway, and... she's just nauseatingly dull and doesn't do anything of any interest, and the film sort of flips and then falls on its face. Now, there is cause for rejoicing here, which is, in America, the film did so badly that it literally opened and closed. There was one... Now, let me read you this fantastic... It was one cinema that it played in which I believe the takings of it were... I don't even have them to hand. It was something like it was the lowest single taking that a film had ever had in that cinema. It was seen by an average of 8 people. That's what they figured. Now, this, I think, is a wonderful thing because I often get off my bike and get really, really cross about the fact, you know, how come these people have these platforms? You have to go and see them. The marvellous thing is that it is like culture reached a point when it went, no more. No. You know what? We're not buying it anymore. And people stayed away from the hottie and the naughty in droves. If you have any interest in the world becoming an improved place, doesn't matter about Sarkozy and the French and Carla Britt, all the rest of it, you want to improve it, just let the hottie and the naughty, just like an expulsion of air, into the cinema, and then it's gone. And then don't get it on video, and just it'll just die. Just go away. Just go away. And then it just be nothing. Just be like a little vapour gas. And then it will all be gone, and everything will be great.
We do record this, and you can watch it on video, and you can watch it through the website. At the moment, he refers to his facts to check box office numbers. He balances his glasses beautifully on the end of his nose like a High Court judge seeking to corroborate his opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're done with that, then?
Yes, it's rubbish and terrible, but just don't encourage it. But I have to say, also, it is deeply offensive.
Okay.
Deeply offensive on the grounds of it is a film that says, you know, hey... we all should look like this. And I think they all look like the Third Reich, is what I think. I just think they just look like Stepford Wives. It's horrible.
There is that certain look of the Hollywood type who've had a bit of work done that looks like they've had an extra hot bath and then got dry in an open-top sports car driving at 90. Do you know that kind of look?
Yeah. But it's just also, it's just, you know, it's body fascism. I'm sorry, that's what it is. People should be allowed to look like people. I just hate this idea that this is what attractive people look like. It's like, no, that's what the Autons look like in Doctor Who.
Drillbit Taylor sees the return of Owen Wilson.
So, very quickly, because we're going to run out of time, this is the other sort of, you know, allegedly family-friendly offering. And the story is Owen Wilson is Drillbit Taylor. He's a bum. He's living, you know, on the streets. He doesn't have anything to do. 3 kids get bullied. They need somebody to bodyguard them. They get in Owen Wilson. Here's a clip.
Are you still in the military?
I was discharged. Unauthorized heroism. As a bodyguard, I protected 3 vice presidents... Bobby Brown, Sylvester Stallone. Not as tough as he looks. So what's the story? Who do you guys need protection from?
It should be easy for you. Just a high school bully.
Yeah. Run into a few of those in my life. What'd you do to provoke him?
He's fat and he's a dork and I'm awesome.
Oh, shut up, Lee.
By awesome, do you mean scared, skinny, and lonely?
Yeah.
And yes, that's exactly what he means. So Owen Wilson decides that he will go into the school and protect them. But in order to do so, he has to pretend to be a teacher. And it's like one of those movies in which they've seen School of Rock and they've seen Ferris Bueller and they've seen some other... And they go, I like that bit and I like that bit and I want that bit and I want that bit. How's it all going to work? It's not going to work at all. But it doesn't matter because Owen Wilson, that'll be the grown-ups. And then it's the kids, that'll sort of be the younger end of it. And it'll be 12A certificate. But so we can sort of get in everybody and we're not really... And it's really shambling and story by and production by... And this is the point at which the bubble is going to burst, right? It is just remaking the dorky, nerdy movie every time. There's the skinny, dorky guy. There's the non-skinny, dorky guy. There's the Owen Wilson factor. And then there's some discussion about they want to go out with, you know, hot... But in this is 12A certificate, so it's all done very sort of modern. And it's not offensive. It's not... It's just incredibly shambolic. And I do wonder whether we have kind of reached a point now when it's all you need to do for them. You just put the elements into the cinema. You don't actually arrange them in any coherent form whatsoever. You just physically pick them up and put them in the cinema. And what that this all means is, of all the stuff that we've looked at so far this week, the best movie, head and shoulders above the rest, is 27 Dresses. And you remember how unenthralled I was by 27 Dresses? That's the state of play at the moment.
It's a pleasure as always. I have to say that.
Thank you. Yes, you do. You're contractually obliged.
I'm contractually obliged. He'll be back next week with Simon.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.